This recap of the Lego Batman movie is sponsored by NatureBox. You want to have 9-pack abs like Batman? Well, then you got to start thinking about snacking healthier. That's right. But not everybody has an Alfred at home to make all of their meals. That's why you need to stock your pantry with great tasting, better for you snacks from NatureBox, because NatureBox has all of the high quality ingredients free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you can feel great about snacking. I love the dark cocoa nom noms for the dark night. I love the pistachio power clusters as well. NatureBox is making their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, with no minimum purchase required, and you can cancel anytime. It's simple. Go to naturebox.com, check out the whole catalog. Over 100 snacks to choose from. That's more than they're even Batman villains. They're constantly adding delicious new snacks. Choose the ones you want. They deliver them right to your door with NatureBox. You never get bored. New snacks every month inspired by real customer feedback. And if you try one you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. And right now, save even more. NatureBox is offering our listeners 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/podcast. That's naturebox.com/podcast for 50% off your first order at naturebox.com/podcast. The Lego Batman movie is over, but we are just getting started here on the post-show movie recap. And now, here are the two guys who have two big helpings of lobster Thermidor for your podcatcher. I'm Rob Sestrina, and I'm joined by Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how are you?
Hello, I am good. I'm enjoying this lobster, just taking bites out of it, not even bothering to break apart the shell.
Yes. All right. Well, Kevin is our DC expert, and also a lot of the Marvel stuff is a true comic book aficionado, covered a lot of the superhero movies that we've done podcasts about over the years. And this is the first time that you and I are on a podcast exclusively. No Josh Wigler.
I know. I wonder how he feels, if it's like the two friends were just like, wait, they're hanging out without me and I introduced them. I don't like this.
Yes, yes. No Carrie Bradshaw here at this brunch, baby.
That's right. It's just Samantha and someone.
Well, we don't have to get into who's who, but I'm a Miranda. So anyway, very excited to get into this. We're losing all of our superhero audience right now with the Sex and the City talk. So
yeah, they all just clicked off.
Anyway, I'm very excited to talk about the Lego Batman movie, a very highly anticipated film at my house. My son, Dominic, has been talking about this movie for quite some time. Loved the Lego movie from 2014, was it?
I think it's 2014. It was definitely a few years ago, and I think 2014 sounds right.
So we were waiting for this to drop and finally got to go see it today. So very excited to talk about this with you. Kevin, first off, how have you been?
Not too bad. Busy with my work schedule and stuff. That kind of was what helped, sidelined Josh and I during the Luke Cage podcast, as some people knew. We weren't able to do our usual episode by episode, but, you know, being busy is not that bad. I've been, you know, doing work, trying to work on some side projects as well, watching a lot of TV, as I want to do, and watching Lego Batman, which at this household as well, I have to say, we were pretty excited for it between my girlfriend and I. We've been highly anticipating this film as well.
We are going to have full spoilers of the Lego Batman movie. Again, I don't know how much we could really spoil in a Lego Batman movie for you, but we will be talking about the details of the film. But I guess let's just start off big picture and then we will drill down. So you got like a couple minutes if you're really concerned about spoilers, if you're on the fence as to whether or not you should see it. But I think that I would say certainly that my recommendation is two thumbs way up.
Absolutely. Like, without question. Like, I loved every minute of the film. From the opening, the very, very opening, with his narration about starting things on a black screen, I was like, this clearly is very self-aware. This knows what it's doing. And all the way to the end with the white screen, perfection. Like, every second of that film, I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, I really felt like that this was so much fun. It was so meta. And I really feel like it hit the tone perfectly of what these superhero movies should be. And I was wondering from you if you thought that maybe there was a bit of the Deadpool effect where the lighthearted superhero movie is the kind of film that resonates with the superhero audience much more than, I mean, I went back and I watched some of Batman versus Superman again.
Oh, no.
To get ready.
Why?
For this.
Why would you do that?
Oh, my. Everything is so heavy-handed and depressing.
Yeah.
And dark. And I mean, what a downer all of that stuff is. But this was so fun.
It was. And I think that's to me, that's the key, is being able to not necessarily just be lighthearted, but being aware to a certain extent of what you're doing and knowing that it's just fun sometimes to poke fun at yourself. And this movie does that. Like you talked about the you know, the dark, depressing, gritty, grim nature of Batman v Superman. And like this movie pokes fun at that. There's that amazing scene where Alfred talks about how he's been so weird and depressed lately, and they cut to all the previous Batman films and just Lego-fied. And I cracked up at that. But that's, you know, a purposefully lampshaded moment that I think kind of points to the fact that, like, sometimes you just got to be fun with this stuff and embrace it. This is honestly a very throwback to the 60s era, but in a great way. There was so much love for the 60s TV show in this film.
Yeah, I mean, they paid homage to almost every incarnation of Batman along the way. And it seemed as though they just tried to say that this is all one Batman, all the way back from the 60s, I guess, even like, you know, they showed like some black and white stuff also going back to comic books. So all the while, this has all been one Batman. Is there any canon of Lego Batman?
Oh, man, there's no canon as far as like the regular comics are concerned as a Lego Batman entity. But there has been, in a very, very trippy sort of way, what a very famous comic book writer, Grant Morrison, has proposed that all the Batman stuff from the past 75 years has actually happened to this person just in a very condensed timeline.
Oh, wow.
Which explains why Batman is a bit crazy, is because like he's had so much weird stuff happen to him in just only essentially like a decade. And so it is like there's sort of precedent for the idea that it's been one Batman experiencing all these different eras and all these different styles and all these different personalities. But I think the Lego movie does it in a very fun way, whereas the comic version can get a little bit like, oh, man, this guy's led a very messed up life.
I thought that this was so fun. And I'm wondering, in your expert opinion, do you feel like that the DC expanded film universe has a Lego Batman problem, where I feel like that if the Justice League movie was going to be the Lego Justice League movie, I think I would be way more excited at this point?
Yeah, honestly, like 100%. Like, I feel like the Lego films and the way they treat it and the fun they have is such like it's such builds such anticipation. And like, at the end of the day, like, you can take, you know, like you did, you took your kid to see this movie, but I feel like taking a kid to see like Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad is not really an option. You know, you can, I probably wouldn't recommend it, but you have this effect now where it's like, it's a movie for everyone, essentially. Like, anyone can go see this film and really enjoy it, because there's references, there's things for kids, there's references for comic book fans. And like, you know, you gave it 2 thumbs up and you're way not as into like the comic book history as like someone like me, but I think we had like equal levels of enjoyment.
I mean, it was really, really fun. I wish I could say that my son Dominic enjoyed it as much. This was the first time he ever went to a movie, and I just think that the experience, he was excited, though he was into the popcorn and everything like that. But then, you know, between the trailers and then, you know, when we got to some of like, you know, I don't want to say there's any really talky scenes, but I have to say that Barbara Gordon's proposal, I think, really started to lose him. And then, you know, 10 minutes after that, he was just, like, climbing around the seats and just like, should we leave? I'm like, no, we're not leaving.
He's a kid. He doesn't know how movies work yet. He doesn't understand theaters. It's a learning process, you know?
He didn't really get it. So I feel like that it's not really a movie for little kids. I think that if you had a kid who was like 6 or 7, I think that this is probably going to be a home run for them. But I feel like a 3-year-old is still too small. This isn't The Secret Life of Pets.
Right. I haven't seen that movie, but I don't know. This movie might be better. Yeah. in my completely uneducated opinion.
Like, I don't want to crap on The Secret Life of Pets. A lot of voice talent there as well. But again, it's not going to be really, I think, hold the attention of like the little kids who don't really get the novelty of like a lot of the jokes that were coming at us really hard and fast throughout this whole film. So let me talk through with you some of the things that you really did like. So could you just talk us through some of the highlights, especially as somebody who's a longtime Batman fan?
Yeah, I mean, like we kind of mentioned, the lampshady moments of like referring to the previous different Batman films and different Batman TV shows. I love how they just kind of Lego-fied that. They had the Lego-fied Batman and Superman running at each other, I thought was a very clever thing. But even beyond that, there's so many like jokes and like meta moments from like that. One of my favorites is where the Joker actually lists off a bunch of villains. And at a certain point, even the audience had to have been like, no, you're making all this up. And he says, like, these are all real. It's worth a Google. And it's true. Condiment King is a real villain. Like, this is a person that existed. And I love how much we saw of Condiment King throughout this movie.
Yeah.
Constantly shooting mustard and ketchup everywhere.
So I did Google Condiment King. The only thing that I will say with Condiment King, it seems as though the origins of Condiment King seem as though that they were like trying to be funny when they made up Condiment King, where it was like, okay, well, like what sort of like the wackiest villain we could make up. And I felt like the show was treating it like it was a unironic creation, Condiment King.
Sure. But there was also Egghead, which is like Vincent Price's character, you know,
sure,
was originally in that.
Yeah,
like that's a real character they created. And there's actually a perfect contrast is that there's a character whose name I forgot, but he's like a Green Lantern villain from way back in the day. And he just basically sprayed yellow paint everywhere because Green Lantern can't affect the color yellow back in the day. And that wasn't ironic. That is just straight up a thing that happened.
Yeah.
So I think there is a level of like a funness and acknowledgement there that I really enjoyed. Also, the voice cast of the villains was spectacular. Zach Galifianakis was so good as the Joker. It really hit like the perfect level of comedy for him. And like that moment where Batman's telling him he's not his only villain and he's not his arch enemy and he looks all sad, everyone in the theater was cracking up at that.
Well, it's really funny because that was such a big, strong beat that was in all of the trailers about like, ah, ha, ha, that's a joke. But it really was sort of like the inciting incident, which really sets forth the whole film, the Batman-Joker relationship. And really, I mean, that was what propelled the entire film, was just the Joker's hurt feelings about this relationship, sort of like a jilted lover of Batman's. Yeah.
They did not shy away from a lot of that, which actually somewhat surprised me. But it was great. And it's true. It's like what was played for a joke in the trailer and is still kind of a joke in the movie, though, was exactly that. It sets into motion everything that happened. And I kind of love the fact that there was a certain level of gravitas to it. The whole movie really is about Batman and his relationships. And like that's a very big point in the comics about him, like, is Batman a loner? But he has this family, you know, the Batman lost his real family and created his own through the Robins, through Batgirl. And this movie really touched on that. And I think that's also a big part of like what was sort of missing in Batman v Superman, for example, is this grumpy Batman loner who got just really violent. And a lot of people are just like, yeah, but he's much better when he's not so crazy and not so grumpy and not branding people with metal, you know. And this movie really was about that. It was about saying like, hey, Batman can be fun and people can enjoy it still. Like he can still be kind of grumpy and kind of weird. But if he has a contrast with like someone like Robin, it's totally cool. Which also Michael Cera's Robin, I think, actually, let me amend something. Michael Cera's Robin might be my favorite part of the entire film.
What was it that you liked so much about it?
Just his earnestness and the like how much fun he was having. Like there's just scenes with him that like really made me laugh. And it's that perfect contrast to Batman. And I think that's what makes it work so well, especially in this film, like where he's like looking through Batman's costumes, where he's just excited to be in the Batcave. There's just so many scenes with him and it's just him having this like wide-eyed, like literal wide-eyedness. That's really fantastic.
There's so many moments that, you know, I've seen from the watching the trailers, and we've watched the trailers on YouTube quite a bit, but just like trying on the different costumes and ultimately landing on Reggae-mon.
It was an unfortunate time. Yeah, I love that's how they got the Robin costume. And even beyond that, too, the references to so many costumes, like later on, he puts on the Nightwing costume, which is a nod to the comics, because in the comics, Dick Grayson goes on to become the character Nightwing. He takes on a new identity and becomes his own sort of hero and moves out from Batman's shadow, so to speak. So even that, like, is a nice little reference for comic book fans. They have so many of them in this movie.
I want to go back to the relationship between the Joker and Batman, because the film really does explore the idea that Batman doesn't want to have any of these relationships. But really, the film at the same time really builds out sort of like the nuclear family of Batman with Robin and then also Alfred, and eventually with Barbara Gordon, which I feel like they really do like toe the line between it, whether it's ever a romantic relationship or not. I think that Batman even calls her platonic at one point.
Yeah.
And I guess that maybe we have like a will they or won't they set up for a second film. But also then at the same time, you have the relationship between Batman and the Joker. And I'd love to know from you, what do you think is the more important relationship for Lego Batman?
That's a tough one. If the choice is between Batman and Barbara Gordon versus Batman and then Joker, hands down, Batman Joker, I think, is the more important relationship there. And, you know, that's used as like something to put against, to show that, you know, like he needs relationships around him, full stop. But like, I, you know, the Barbara Gordon thing has been a weird thing for the comics. Like sometimes people imply that him and Barbara have a thing. Other times they don't. That one's a weird one to touch on, because there are many points where Barbara Gordon is very much a young child, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so developing later on was like, well, when she's older, they kind of have a relationship. It's like still weird to me. But Batman and the Joker, I think, is such an important relationship. I mean, like that's kind of built on in a lot of incarnations, from movies to TV to comics. Like if you look back at, you know, the old Keaton 1989 Batman Michael Keaton film with Jack Nicholson, like their relationship is connected. Like, you know, Batman essentially creates the Joker, but you find out the Joker created Batman. In The Dark Knight, the Joker talks about how they complete each other. You know, there would be no him without Batman. And I think that relationship they have is very important. Like they're mirror images of each other to a certain extent. Like people talk about Batman being sort of a crazy to a certain extent, like part of him is kind of unstable, and the Joker is that extreme version of it. There's a great comic book theory about how Batman's villains reflect parts of his personality. Like the Riddler reflects his intelligence, whereas the Joker reflects his insanity. Ra's al Ghul reflects his planning. Like there's a really good evidence about like how his villains, what they mean to him, and I think this kind of plays off that in a much more comedic way. But I think, yes, hands down to me, Batman and Joker, to answer your question in a very long way, Batman and Joker over the Barbara Gordon Batman relationship.
What about on the flip side of things, between Joker and Harley Quinn and Batman, and that sort of love triangle of both sort of like vying for the attention of the Joker? I know after Suicide Squad this past year, so much is made of the Harley Quinn and the Joker relationship, but I did feel like that Harley Quinn was very much a third wheel for the Joker in this film.
Yeah, no, I mean, to a certain extent, it always depends on, like, I guess who's writing it. And I think at the end of the day, like, Joker and Harley, I do kind of love the relationship, and I do love the idea of two crazy people in love with each other. But I think even for me, who can like love their relationship, Joker will always choose Batman over Harley Quinn. Like, I think Joker's existence, Joker's main purpose in life is Batman. And that's sort of, you know, like how this movie portrays it. It's such an important thing to him that it leads to everything that's happening in the film. And Batman wants to deny that relationship, but he needed to learn to accept that, hey, the Joker can be my true enemy, and these people can be my true family. You know, it's about, in a weird way, about those type of things.
I want to talk about the portrayal of the Justice League in this film. So we have a scene where Batman goes up to the Fortress of Solitude to go and find the ray gun, the projector for the Phantom Zone, with Robin, and he shows up and there is a big party there for the Justice League. Now, I actually thought that Superman and the Justice League were going to be a bigger part of the film, because I feel like that they're featured pretty prominently in a lot of the commercials for the film. Yeah. But really, they're mostly just in this one scene. But how cool was the party at Superman's Fortress of Solitude?
I loved it so much. Like, when he walks in and there's a party happening and he wasn't invited, it just made me laugh so much, especially the, you know, precluding scene with him trying to being so mean to Robin, who's doing so many, you know, doing what he's asking so well. And he's like, it's adequate. And it's like, well, this is why you don't get invited to these parties, Batman. But yeah, I love that scene. And I love Channing Tatum as Lego Superman. He, you know, Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill voiced Lego Superman and Lego Green Lantern in the Lego movie. And they were all also in there very briefly, but I absolutely loved their interpretation of those characters. I was so glad to see them back here. And I really kind of want them to have I want to see the Lego Superman movie of him and Green Lantern, and Green Lantern desperately trying to be his friend.
Yeah.
It's just really great. And there was a lot of characters, again, like right. a lot of characters in there. Did you recognize all of them or a lot of them?
Well, I really grew up with the animated Super Friends, and so it was very fun to see the Wonder Twins and the monkey even invited to the party where Batman didn't even get an invitation.
Yeah, it was great. Like, they actually, when I was looking at that scene, they had the regular Justice League people and they had the Wonder Twins. They also had Black Vulcan, Apache Chief. They had a lot of the characters that were specifically from Super Friends at that party, and I kind of really, really enjoyed that they included those characters.
I mean, it ends up being so fun that you end up having the entire Rogues Gallery, where every single Batman bad guy is there. And then you had in this scene where every single Justice League character is there. I actually thought it was odd at the end of the movie where, when they need all these reinforcements, they turn to the Rogues Gallery, especially after Batman, like in an obvious Suicide Squad joke, had said like, oh, really? We're going to have bad guys helping us capture bad guys? That sounds like a terrible idea. But that's ultimately...
That's a great impersonation, by the way.
It's okay. It's... They end up going there where I felt like, oh, OK, I thought that at that scene in the end of the movie where like Gotham is splitting in half, I thought Superman was going to come in and really help get everything back together.
I also thought that that's where the movie was going to end up going. I'm not mad it didn't go that way, but I also thought we would have seen the Justice League and kind of a broader repairing of their relationships as well. But I'm not totally against the fact that the villains were involved, but it was weird that they specifically made fun of Suicide Squad and then did the thing with inviting the villains to help them.
Yeah, because when they put up the Bat signal and then they put up the Bat Girl signal or the Barb signal, right. I feel like they really danced around whether or not she was going to be called Bat Girl. I don't think they ever said it where, Batman threw it out there and she's like, oh, if you call me that, can I call you Bat Boy?
Bat Boy, yeah.
But then they never really, nailed it down that that's what her name was going to be. So I don't even know if we're not supposed to even be calling her Batgirl at this point, because
that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
But when they put up the signal of, okay, let's put up this signal, real quick, there were so many small icons, I just assumed it was the Justice League people. But no, it was actually the symbols for all of the Rogues Gallery of bad guys.
Yeah, I kind of want to pause that scene when I get out on DVD and just watch and see what all the symbols are for each of the villains, because I'm very curious now what they used.
So one of the other really, really fun things that I didn't know was going to be a thing in this movie was, so they had this whole plot of, okay, there's the Phantom Zone, and we had, General Zod was there, Superman's on a talk show. Did you like that we went with the Richard Donner version of General Zod and not the Zack Snyder, Michael Shannon General Zod?
Yeah, I mean, I will say up front, I love Michael Shannon. I actually liked his General Zod in his portrayal of the character. But I was so happy that they actually had like these little references to the original Richard Donner film, with Terrence Stamp's General Zod. And even to a certain extent, Channing Tatum, the Fortress of Solitude is very much the one from that film. Channing Tatum is still wearing the briefs as his Superman. And I think that this movie really embraced that era, and it kind of fits into the theme of like this throwback film of Batman kind of having to be like his, 1960s self, as opposed to the current day. But it was, I did not expect one, them to have the Phantom Zone stuff and include Terrence Zip. And then two, to find out who else was in the Phantom Zone. Yeah. I had no idea this is where this movie was going.
Yeah. I mean, and these become like big characters in the movie. So do you want to give us the rundown of the top characters from the Phantom Zone?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So we had Voldemort.
Yes.
Which is really amazing, but also weird because I checked out the credits at the end, and even though Ralph Fiennes voices Alfred, he doesn't voice Voldemort, and he played Voldemort in the Harry Potter film. So it was very strange where I was just like, wait, why didn't he just voice the character? Which would have been great for, you know, fans, but it was totally fine. Eddie Izzard did the voice, and I do love Eddie Izzard. So we had Voldemort, we had Sauron from Lord of the Rings, we had the shark from Jaws, I'm pretty sure, we had King Kong.
Like, we have to, like, we can trace it back to, you know, the Warner Brothers properties now. I just know from my studio touring that Jaws is featured very prominently at Universal.
Yeah.
And everybody from the Phantom Zone were all people in the Warner Brothers films.
Okay.
So I think then it was just a shark, but right. Not the shark.
That shark. Well, what's great is that I loved, and I can't believe it didn't really occur to me, but they do the reference earlier in the film when Robin is in the Batcave and he finds the bat shark repellent, which is a throwback to the 60s movie. And the fact that it comes into play later when he gets attacked by the shark and uses it really delighted me. It was sort of a Chekhov's gun situation, and I'm glad that it paid off.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they also had, because they had King Kong. And they had, now this is one,
you know, admit that King Kong also featured very prominently at Universal, and that, you know, so you know, what do I know?
Well, they also had the Daleks, which they don't say though that word, but it was definitely the Doctor Who Daleks, which, you know, is definitely not a Warner Brothers property. It's a
future
BBC
robots
thing. Yeah, future robots, they called them. Ask your nerd friends. Which, that's me, I guess. They're Daleks from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me though, and this, I'm going to have to put out to the web to see if it can be confirmed. But the green creature that was hanging out, the giant green one that was hanging out the size of King Kong and accidentally kills Sauron, which was a hilarious moment after he blasts him and then sneaks away. That wasn't Godzilla because it didn't look like Godzilla. The only thing I can think of, because he's voiced by Seth Green, is I think that creature is the Kraken from a Robot Chicken sketch, okay, which made fun of the Kraken from Clash of the Titans. That is my only reference point in my head that I was able to connect certain dots. And I want to know if this is accurate. If that was the joke, is that it's the Kraken from Clash of the Titans as voiced by Seth Green, who did this on Robot Chicken.
That might be a tweet to Seth Green answer to be able to get.
All right, I'm on it. I'm sure Seth is going to take time out of his day to answer me.
Well, it's a yes or no question. Was it going to take 5 seconds to answer that? Look, if he is the Kraken based on a Robot Chicken sketch, that he wants to tell as many people as he can.
That's true. Get them to watch Robot Chicken.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm trying to think of what other villains are in there. There's so many.
I loved that the gremlins were featured prominently. I was not expecting that in this film.
Yeah, I did not see that coming. And then you actually see Spike too, with his white hair spike and everything. And I was like, oh man, this is deep cuts right here.
Yeah, it really was. Also, was Agent Smith from The Matrix also part of the villains in the Phantom Zone?
He was. That is true. Was that Hugo Weaving?
I don't know.
They didn't actually get Hugo Weaving for that.
I don't think they did, based on just scrolling through the IMDb. I don't even think he had a line, but he looked like he was there. I mean, it was weird that they would have Medusa, they had like the Wicked Witch of the West.
And her flying monkeys.
Yeah. A dinosaur also happened to be in there. So
yeah, they had a raptor and a velociraptor, and a T-Rex and a raptor.
Yeah, so it was all really fun to see those guys as well. So, in terms of the Lego Batman franchise, I mean, do you think that as this goes on to make more Lego Batman movies? And do you think that there is sort of an expiration on this as well?
I'm hoping that it does. I hope they keep up the quality. Like, I think that's an important thing. Like, the Lego movie was so expertly done. And like the people who did, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller are phenomenal. They've done so many things, and like currently they're doing Last Man on Earth, which is amazing. And they didn't directly work on this film, but I think they executive produced it. And as long as the quality of this level and the level of the Lego movie is there, I would love for them to continue this like forever in perpetuity. Like I would love a cinematic DC Lego universe. Like I would love to see Justice League follow this. Which would be really weird because it's such a contrast to what's happening in the regular DC cinematic universe right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I just don't know. Did they use all of their A material here? Are there enough jokes left to do another Lego Batman movie?
I think there's enough jokes to, that's why I think the next step is definitely to do a Justice League one. I think you got to open it up to the broader DCU because they hit a lot of Batman stuff in this. They even like early on when the Joker is talking about his plot, one half of the best friend pilots mentions, you know, yeah. Oh, well, what about that time with the two boats, which was directly from The Dark Knight, and the time with the parade and the Prince music, which is from the Batman, you know, 1989 film. Like, so there's a lot of subtle and amazing references. So I think they got to go to a bigger well, so to speak, next, because they're sort of they hit a lot of the big ones in this one.
I mean, that the Justice League would be really, really interesting to get the Lego treatment in terms of like, you know, Superman and all of the other characters there that I feel like that they barely scratched the surface of in this film. Do you think that there's potentially a different franchise that they go to outside of DC Comics for the next Lego movie?
Oh, man.
Now, I noticed the Ninja Go Lego film, which
I didn't even know about until I saw the trailer.
I'm pretty sure it's just the like made up Lego franchise that
I think so. I think we Googled this and I think it was completely a Lego thing, not some based on something that already existed.
Yeah. Hey, Lego, stop trying to make Ninja Go happen.
It's not going to happen, Gretchen.
Yes. There's no attraction there for me with like I don't even know how to get my kid to get into Ninja Go.
Yeah,
I guess it's big.
Someone has to maybe be watching it. I don't know. Like it's really weird because it was one that I was like, I've never heard of this. I don't know what this is. I don't know what's happening right now. It does have Kumail Nanjiani in it apparently, and so for me that's already like okay, well that's a point in the column.
The trailer looks funny, I'll say.
Yeah. But it is such a weird thing. I think they do need to, or they should also stick with pre-made franchises. Like, I would love to see Batman. I mean, that was one of the cool things about the Lego movie, right? Like, Batman was in it, and they traveled to all these different universes, and you saw all these characters interacting. So I would love to see, like, Batman and his, you know, and his friends going on to, like, another universe to help them, like, entering the Lord of the Rings universe or something. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of potential for them to explore a lot of things like that. Yeah. It would be hard to do something just specifically Lego Lord of the Rings because that's such a set story, whereas Batman is still an open world franchise that still is continuing to this day. There's still new Batman stories, you know what I mean?
Right. Now, are we sort of locked into with the Lego films? It has to be a Warner Brothers property. Like, I know that there is the scene where the Millennium Falcon shows up in the original Lego movie. Is there any possibility of some sort of Lego Star Wars treatment?
Oh, man, I honestly would love that. I mean, it's something that hasn't been done in so long. And even still, we had references here where Batman said, you know, his password is Iron Man sucks, which is clearly, you know, poking fun at Marvel. You know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit had Warner Brothers and Disney characters together. There's a lot of rules and regulations for that to happen, but I would love to be able to see that. I would love to see Batman crossover, you know, Lego Batman and Lego Star Wars. I would love to see Lego Batman and Lego Marvel characters. Honestly, if we can't get a Marvel DC crossover in the main cinematic universe and we can't really get it in today's comics, I would love to see that in Lego form.
Aside from the Avengers and all of like the main Marvel characters, to get any sort of like even Lego X-Men, I think that there's a lot of runway there.
Oh man, wow. I haven't even thought about Lego X-Men, but now that's all I want. I'm a huge X-Men fan, and now that's what I actually want. I'll take it back. I'll take it all back. Yeah. Give me Lego X-Men.
You know, I feel like that with the current state of these superhero movies, that I feel like that, you know, Chris Nolan came in and really, you know, had got everybody's attention and really, you know, I think that, again, this is speaking coming from a casual fan of these superhero films, but I feel like that, you know, The Dark Knight was like the culmination of this. And then I feel like that now everything is just trying to copy that gravitas and that tone. And I just feel like that this is just come along and been the antithesis. Do we have to blame Chris Nolan that he made it good, but now we have to blame him for, you know, what has gotten bad and stale about these movies?
I think you shouldn't blame the person who did the original thing that was good. You know, you should blame the people who tried to imitate it badly, I guess.
Like, okay, fair enough.
I can't. Like, even, you know, I'm not a big Twilight fan, but Twilight was what it was, and there's a lot of really bad Twilight knockoffs, and I won't blame Twilight for those knockoffs existing. I will blame the people who tried to mimic it and did badly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like the same here, like I love the Christopher Nolan films, and I think they set a particular tone and they did a particular take on Batman that I think was spectacular and fit into the universe that he created. Unfortunately, I think other people are trying to mimic that tone without really nailing what he was trying to do. They're just trying to make it grim and gritty to me for grim and gritty's sake, as opposed to Christopher Nolan was trying to tell a very particular type of story.
Kevin, so what are the next couple of films? Is it Justice League next?
It's actually Wonder Woman's coming out next, I believe, in March.
Oh.
And then, yeah, really close. And then Justice League in November, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so two in 1 year.
Yeah.
And then is Affleck gone after this, or is he just staying on these films, but he's just not directing them?
Well, that's the question, right? Like, I know he's not directing the next Batman movie now. I think he's supposedly, I think, signed for more movies, but there's all those rumors that I've seen online about how he doesn't want to do it anymore, which is difficult because, like, I don't really, you know, those are rumors. We don't know anything about any truth to them. And it'd be really weird to have to replace your Batman after two films. So I would hope he sticks around. Honestly, I said this in the Batman v Superman podcast. I actually liked Ben Affleck as Batman. I thought he did a good job playing Batman. I just think that some of the things they wrote for Batman to do wasn't very Batman-like. But I'm excited, you know, to see a Wonder Woman movie. And I feel like Wonder Woman was also not very utilized in the Lego film, sadly. I could have used a little bit more of her as well.
I'm fine with the Lego Wonder Woman movie as well. Yeah. That's fine also. I think replace everybody with the Legos. I think who's not happy at that point?
Can you imagine a live action Justice League film and then they cut to Batman and it's just a giant Lego that they're interacting and talking to as if nothing is unusual?
I think the next step is we need the live action Batman Lego movie.
Oh my God. just Ben Affleck himself now in this giant Lego suit walking around.
Right.
Or would they bring in Will Arnett? I would not mind that actually. If Ben Affleck does leave, just right. Have Will Arnett take the
just
place.
Just like we're going to do live action Beauty and the Beast. Now we're going to do live action Lego superhero movies.
That's the Warner Brothers take on live action level. Disney stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We've reached peak madness in movies now.
All right. I got some questions I want to get to from the listeners of the podcast. But first, let me just take a moment and mention that this Sunday is going to be the premiere, Kevin. You know, you talk about a good fight between Batman and Superman. The good fight is coming to CBS All Access. It's the next chapter of The Good Wife story. Now, I think there was some talk of doing Lego Good Wife. That's not what they're going to end up doing. What they're doing is Good Fight on CBS All Access. It is set in the world of The Good Wife after the events of The Good Wife.
It would be interesting to see a Lego version of that film, or a TV show, rather. I think it'd be very dramatic.
Yes, it would be very dramatic because Robert and Michelle King are continuing on as the showrunners. Christine Baranski is back as Diane Lockhart. Diane's at the end of her career, planning retirement, lost everything in a Ponzi scheme, and now has to rebuild her life, and not with Legos. Cash Jumbo is back as Luca Quinn. She's finding her footing, joining a new law firm. And Rose Leslie joins the cast as Maya Rindell, beginning her career as a lawyer when her dad's accused of starting the Ponzi scheme that ruined Diane.
Oh, man, that is intense.
Yeah, intense cast. Plus, lots of the Good Wife guest stars are going to be back, including Carrie Preston, Gary Cole, Matthew Perry. And just like The Good Wife, The Good Fight will not shy away from controversial issues of the day. New episodes start Sundays beginning February 19th. You could start your free trial of CBS All Access. Go to cbs.com/goodfight. That's cbs.com/goodfight. Okay, let's get to some questions from the listeners. Rachel Wagner wants to know, how do you think it compared to the Lego movie? If you had to rank Lego Batman movie, Lego movie, what do you think?
I definitely am going to have to give it up to Lego movie on that one. I really enjoyed Lego Batman. There are criticisms I could throw at it. I think the message, obviously, about the importance of family is very important for the film, but they did kind of hammer it home a lot several times. Mm-hmm. I think the Lego movie was... I think they both have equal levels of comedy, but the Lego movie just had so much more going on, so many more references, a lot more to play with. And I think at the end of the day had a tighter written story, so to speak. But that is not to take away from the Lego Batman movie. I definitely think it is top notch.
If I had one complaint, I would say I thought that maybe having, you know, Batman and Robin in jail for like 15, 20 minutes and sort of, you know, where we had our protagonist really not having any action going on. They just like sort of just like sit there. They don't even break out of jail. They just sort of like, you know, eventually just like get released. Barbara Gordon comes in like, OK, you guys, we do need you guys. Come on out.
I do love how Alfred just apparently walked into Arkham, and even Barbara was like, how did you? Because like he just apparently just walked in. Just Alfred just showed up to Arkham and they let him into the jails.
Alfred had a lot of action here. I think this might have been Alfred's best time out in any of the Batman movies.
He even had his own costume, which was the 1960s one. I love that, too, when they just all ripped off their clothes. Robin ripped off his pants to have the, you know, Robin costume underneath.
OK, Will from America wants us to rank all of the cinematic Joker performances. OK, so.
Oh, boy.
All right. So I guess that we are starting with Jack Nicholson. And then we're going to obviously have Heath Ledger, Jared Leto, and then Zach Galifianakis.
Well, we should also include Cesar Romero because he was in a TV show, but he also was in the 60s movie. So I think okay. he fits the bill.
sure. Okay. So there you go. Those five, I guess that you have to. There'd be outrage if you didn't have Ledger as number one.
Yeah, I think for me, hands down, for the cinematic stuff, Ledger is my number one.
Okay.
And now is where it gets tricky, everyone.
Well, who's number two?
I think, oh man, this is so tough because I think I'm going to put Jack Nicholson as two, but the number three spot of Zach Galifianakis is pretty high up there right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a debate for me to have Nicholson above Galifianakis. It could just be my high of just seeing this movie. Okay. But
he's definitely three. He's definitely ahead of Jared Leto.
Oh, yeah, I would then easily follow it with Cesar Romero and then Jared Leto at the bottom.
You hated Jared Leto in Suicide Squad?
I did not like a lot of what they did. There were certain things I really enjoyed. I think there's a part where you don't see him on the screen. You just kind of hear his voice. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then he came into the light and I was like, oh, and it's gone. And so It really took a turn in that regard. Do you have a ranking of your own, or do you follow suit? Where's your ranking on some of this stuff?
I have to defer to the expert here. I'm fine with all that. I do think that the problem with Leto, I think they hyped it up too much during the filming. Like you just heard, like, oh my god, Jared Leto, he's like he might be the best Joker we've ever had.
That's true. Yeah,
too much hype.
They really played him up a lot.
Yeah, they should have said like Jared Leto, like I don't know about this Joker. And then you're just like, oh, no, this is pretty good. That was fun.
And then people would have been like, I liked it. Why were they so mean to him about this, you know, about this movie beforehand?
Right. Then we have a question. This is from PJ, who wants to know, what villain should have been in the Phantom Zone that wasn't? And which villain in the Phantom Zone had no right being in there? Okay. Is there anybody that you wish they would have got into the Phantom Zone?
Oh, man, this is a lot of history of films that I'm just plowing through in my head right now. I would have loved to see, well, at my own personal preference, I would love to see Biff Tannen.
From Biff Back Tannen to the Future. Would be perfect.
Yeah, because I Back to the Future is my favorite film. Yeah. So I would love to have seen him.
I think you want to have Darth Vader. I don't remember. Was he in the original Lego movie?
I think. Oh, man, I'm trying to rack my brain now. I want to say he was, but it could just be me confusing the Lego Star Wars video games in my head now.
We watch a lot of Lego Star Wars that's on like Disney XD, which and he's always very funny. Lego Darth Vader. So I'm a big fan of him. What about like Freddy Krueger? Could you have gotten him into the Phantom Zone?
I think, see, that's where I think it could be the hard sell. Like honestly, Freddy and Jason and all those guys would have been really hilarious to see. But I think like you hit a point there where it's like movies that are too adult for kids. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's too scary. And so right. I think it would have been missed if they had, you know, if they'd shown them, it would have been, it wouldn't have hit as right. strongly, I think.
So Lego Hannibal Lecter, you don't think would have played for the kids?
I ate his block with a side of Chianti.
It would have been funny. I think you could have had him like sort of like in the straitjacket.
Yeah, you don't really hear him. And then they're just like, you know what? Let's not take that one. He's a bit much. Like the other Lego guys are just like, he's a bit too scary even for us.
Okay, this one's a criticism from Tom Tomillo, who says, it seems to me the best moments of the movie were the first 20 minutes or so. That's not to say that the rest of the movie wasn't great, but it seemed to peak too early before setting into a good level. What do you think of that?
I disagree. I think the opening was very strong. I think having all his villains, I think Batman's song at the beginning was great. Seeing him alone was really great. But honestly, like the intro of Robin, I think only comes in like 15 minutes in or something. And to me, like that takes it to another level. Like, as I mentioned, Robin's my favorite part of the film. And I think the rest of the movie, you know, after that 20 minute mark is all him and Robin. So I'm going to have to sadly disagree with that assessment, sir.
Sorry, Tom. Sorry about that. Okay, this is from Molly Shock, who wants to know, for giggles, for those who have an iPhone, ask Siri, hey, pewter.
Oh,
yeah.
I have not done that. Should we try this?
I haven't done it. I don't know. Do you need to name your Siri pewter?
I don't think so. I think it could just respond because she just responds to weird things.
I mean, I could try it.
Let me see if I could get this going here. Hey, pewter.
I am at your service. Lego Batman, sir.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty solid. I'm glad that they built that in.
Yeah. So, yeah, good for Apple. I mean, there was a lot of iPhone that was like, you saw like a lot of times they had like a brick that clearly said iPhone on the back. I didn't know if that was any sort of product placement.
Well, actually, because like I was watching the credits at the end to see who voiced who, and Pewter is credited as Siri. So I think Apple actually, you know, had the voice of Siri do the voice of Pewter.
Yeah.
Which is also weird because is that an AI now? Are we hitting the level now where we're at AI where Siri is being credited for film roles?
Right.
She's going to be a big star.
Could Siri be nominated for an Oscar?
I hope so. If Scarlett Johansson can get the nomination for voicing a computer like Siri, I think Siri's time is coming. She will get robbed this year, but the next year she'll get it, I think.
I mean, who would do Siri's acceptance speech?
I hope someone just holds up an iPhone and she just talks through the phone in a pre-recorded message.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe it. I didn't think it would happen.
They start playing the music on her. She's like, no, I'm not done yet.
No, don't rush me. I have to say a political message. No, come on, Siri.
No, get up, Siri.
Millions of iPhones every year. No, stop. Okay. All right. Scott St. Pierre has a question. How much of the humor was directed at adults versus children? Did you feel like that most of the humor was aimed at the adults in the audience?
That's what I'm actually very curious about. I think there was a lot of humor definitely aimed towards adults and fans of, you know, the Batman movies and just in general DC's movies and Warner Brothers. But I mean, I'm trying to think in my head, like I can't imagine like for a kid what it was like, you know, how you mentioned your son was crawling away. So yeah. I don't know then.
I have to say probably most of the humor and the jokes were directed, I think, towards adults. Like, I don't know if you had like a 5-year-old or 6-year-old that they would think it was cool that it was Batman. But I don't know if they would necessarily think it was a comedy.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the jokes would just go right over their little heads.
Yeah, I think there was plenty of like Lego action, but I don't think that there was really a ton of laughs if you were like a little kid. There wasn't like a lot of like slapstick stuff going on.
Yeah, that's very true. Oh, man. I feel like some kids may have enjoyed that, though, just being able to see the visuals. But you're right. Like, I feel like the jokes really land for adults, and that could possibly be problematic for them in the long run.
No, I think it was fine. I think this was a big hit. How did it do at the box office? So it did really well, right?
Yeah, it was number one for the weekend. And I forgot there was two other movies that came out, and it took the number
Shades
one spot.
Darker.
Very different audiences.
Very different audience, yeah. Does 50 Shades, to get the franchise back on track, do they need to go to the Lego 50 Shades movie?
That would be so weird to watch. I imagine it'd be like that scene in Team America where the two puppets together. Like, I imagine it would be something like that, except possibly worse.
It'd be wild. It'd be wild. All right. Kevin, any final thoughts on the Lego Batman movie?
I hope it does incredibly well, and I hope it makes a ton of money, and I hope we continue this franchise. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that we may have missed on, but there was just so many good scenes. Even when there was a Harry and the Henderson reference when he's shooing away the robot he built. Like, it's just so great.
Yeah. I'm on IMDb. I'm looking at some of the voice credits and people that we didn't mention at all. Conan O'Brien was the Riddler.
I love Conan. You know? And that is perfect.
Yeah. Doug Benson was Bane.
That is also a very, very strange deep cut, because Doug Benson does this podcast.
Doug Loves Movies.
And he does his Bane impersonation during that show all the time. So he's that impersonation, I feel like, definitely got him to do Bane.
Can you do Bane?
Oh, I could try my best. That's my terrible Bane impersonation. I apologize. It was terrible.
Now, Billy Dee Williams was Two-Face.
Yes, that is actually, I can't believe we didn't touch on, because that is a prophecy being fulfilled, essentially.
Yes, because Billy Dee Williams was in, what, Batman Returns?
He was actually in the original Batman in 1989, the very first one, as Harvey Dent. And the promise was that he was going to get to play Two-Face in a later film, and that never happened. So him playing Two-Face here was like the full prophecy coming true now, and it was actually kind of really great. And if they do another one, I hope that he is more prominent, because I would love to see more of Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face.
Yeah. We mentioned Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill.
Yes.
Mariah Carey was Mayor McCaskill.
It's good to see Mariah Carey still doing things, and you know, after her performance and everything, you know, she's bouncing back.
Chris Hardwick is a credited reporter in the film.
He is everywhere.
He's everywhere.
That man has done everything and will continue to be everywhere.
Then Brent Musburger was also accredited as a reporter.
Who is that? That one I don't know.
He's a sportscaster. That's where we're
at. Oh, no. Yeah. That shows where I am on this, huh? Yes.
And I'm sure a lot of Arrested Development fans were psyched to have Will Arnett and Michael Cera as Batman and Robin in this film.
Of course. It's a reunion that is delightful and perfect, in my opinion. And the way they actually kind of acted towards each other half the time was very, you know, father-son/uncle-son, as Arrested Development would be for those two.
Yeah.
There was also Jermaine Clement, I believe, was Sauron, and I actually really enjoyed that as well, because I'm a big Flight of the Conchords fan.
So really, they did a fantastic job with everything. So if you haven't seen it, but you listen to this podcast, I mean, again, this is not a movie that I think you could spoil.
I think
you could enjoy it just as much.
Yeah, for sure.
Kevin, do you have any ideas for a hashtag?
I would vote #LobsterThermidor.
Now, do we know how to spell Thermidor?
Not a chance. #, how do you spell Thermidor?
How about #, Batman's Lobster?
Yeah, #, Batman's Lobster.
Okay. There we go. I was going to say #, Lego 50 Shades, but we don't need to.
That's all of a sudden trending like heavily. They're like, I guess it's in demand, and we lead to the creation of this monstrosity.
Kevin, do you know what a lobster Thermidor is?
I discovered this because my girlfriend explained it to me. It's basically like a twice baked potato, but with lobster. So they cook the lobster and they cook the meat inside, and then they restuff it back into the shell And that's how you make it. So it actually sounds quite delicious. Yeah. And I'm a big seafood fan. And now I'm like, oh, I think I've been missing out. I need to go have this. And, you know.
Is there any comic book reason why Batman is eating so much lobster Thermidor?
Not that I know of. I was trying to think in my head if there was some obscure reference of him like mentioning that being his favorite food. But I couldn't think of anything. There's been a lot of stuff that people joke about, like Batman's favorite food is justice. And there's one where Alfred said his favorite food is mulligatawny soup, I think, is one. Yeah. But lobster
and Thermidor.
That's
also Newman's favorite soup.
Really?
Yeah.
Did not remember that, and I am embarrassed at myself for not knowing that Seinfeld reference right there.
Yeah. Actually, no, I'm sorry. That he likes jambalaya. I think Elaine likes the mulligatawny. Or Kramer does. One of them likes mulligatawny.
One of them.
Yeah. Sorry.
From the Soup Nazi episode,
yes,
I'm guessing.
Yes, my bad. You know, one other thing that I feel like that was really funny and I forgot to mention was the Jerry Maguire stuff.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
Bizarre.
You had me at shut up.
Yeah. Right.
I like how they actually show Jerry Maguire on the screen, yeah, and they all were really laughing at it, which made me laughing in return.
Yeah, it was like very South Park. And then the moment that they kept showing where it's like right at the end of the film where Jerry Maguire comes back in and it's like, you know, you complete me. And then this whole spiel, you had me at hello. But, you know, going back to that, you mentioned that relationship between Joker and Batman from The Dark Knight. I believe that also like echoes that conversation that the Joker had with Batman.
Oh my god, you're right. I didn't put that together. Another weird deep cut in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, this film was amazing, guys.
Yeah, they did a great job with it. So, all right, definitely check it out. Kevin, thank you again. This was so much fun to get to do a podcast with just you. So, great stuff. Kevin, if people want to follow you on Twitter, how do they find you?
You can find me at Kev Mahadeo on Twitter. I tweet as often as I can, which probably should be more than I do. And yeah, that's mainly where you can find me these days. I'm working on getting elsewhere as well, but we'll see how that comes up.
Any other recommendations? Anything else that you're watching right now and really into?
Yes, actually. I just started watching Riverdale, which is not the same as Lego Batman, but no. I am obsessed with it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that are.
It's really well done. It's very dramatic, but I think purposefully so. And as a person who's like, you know, moderately familiar with Archie, I thoroughly enjoy it. It's so almost out of control that I'm obsessed. We watched all three episodes in a row, and now I'm highly anticipating the next one.
That I had done some spots for it on Rob as a podcast back in the beginning of January, and people were like, "What is this show about?" But then I've heard from a lot of people that they really did enjoy it. So
it's really funny because if you try and watch the trailer not knowing it's about Archie, you'd be so confused when they're finally like Riverdale. You're like, "Wait, like Archie? Like what?"
All right, so very fun stuff. All right, so thank you again so much for doing this. That I will be back with Josh Wigler for some Walking Dead feedback coming up next here on Post Show Recaps. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.
Rhetorical!